four species, and I'm holding them. The four species, we have two different commandments on this holiday, on Sukkot. We have sitting in the sukkah,
yeah.
And then there's the four species. So the four species are the lulav, that's the middle long one, that's a palm branch. Then you have hadassim, which are the myrtles.
The what?
Myrtles.
Myrtle, like the tree?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay. And then the.
Is it Myrtle Beach?
Yeah, right. And then the arabos, the willows, these things.
Uh huh.
And then the estrog, the thing that looks like a lemon, except a lemon you could get for three for a dollar. This is like, you know, $60-$70, you know, for the whole set. So these are known as the four species. So what do they represent? Why are we shaking? So on one hand, so to speak, the Medrash, the commentators explain that Sukkot is unique in the sense that usually we know there's the three major pilgrimage holidays is Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuos. Passover, Shavuos when the Bible was given 50 days later, and Sukkot, and known as they're always put together as the three major holidays.
What about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur?
We'll get to them.
Oh, all right.
But those aren't the classical, those are more serious days.
Yeah.
Yes, that's my point, where I'm getting to. So on one hand, Sukkot has a double role. On one hand, it's the third of the cycle, but independently, as Ron is raising, they follow right after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which are obviously high holidays and equally important. So basically, it's a judgment day. So they give an example. Imagine someone after they go to court, they're on trial for a life and death issue, they come out victorious. So too, we come out, you know, like so to speak, we come out of the court, we come out and carrying the four species. So what do they represent? So the different schools of thought. One is the estrog represents the heart. The lulav represents the spine. And the eyes and the lips. And so to speak, it's symbolic of that right after Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, that a person wants to show how we all could try to do better this year than last year. So to speak, I'm going to put all my energy this year, all my body, symbolically four different parts of the body, we put together to show we're going to put in a greater effort this year.
Why does it represent the heart? Is there some symbolism? Why it should? I'm sorry, which is it that represents the heart?
The estrog.
Yeah, so why, I mean, why did they pick that particular item to represent the heart?
Right, because they explain, because the heart is like one of the main functions of your body. Without the heart, we probably won't. Estrog, out of the four, estrog is the main one in terms of it's the most expensive, it's the hardest one to. Yeah, for estrog, you have to like prepare it before. It has to be only prepared in a warm climate. You have to already start preparing months in advance. The other ones also, but they work by themselves. You go behind 14, you know, a lot of people have in the backyard, you just pull off willows, myrtles, so in terms of that. It's not specific heart, it's the fact that the heart is something that is vital to our being. So to estrog is known as more the most vital of the four species in terms of it's the hardest one to get and the most expensive. Or others point out, but yeah, it's just four different ones. Like in theory, according to this, it could have been my legs, hands, you know, it just happens to be, in other words, if it's going to prove the point of trying better, it doesn't necessarily, because the reason from that angle is because you have to put, because if you want to become better, it has to come from your heart. So therefore, obviously you have to be serious and mean it, so that's why it's representative. Now others say different is there, it represents the different types of people. We know there are people that have, let's say, like different fruits, like certain fruits, like they look good and they taste good. So, you know, we could debate what tastes good and looks good, but you have certain fruits that look good and taste good. Some have good looks, but they have no taste. And other people, and then there are bad taste and bad looks, and there is, you know, bad taste, that, you know, and no look. So basically, it's the astrolabe is supposed to represent someone who has everything. The lulav looks nice, but it has no smell. This one has smell, but doesn't look so nice, and the aravos have nothing. So in the Jewish people, or in the whole world for that matter, like in any community, you have some people who are better than others. You know, people work hard, people, whatever the reasons are, people, by look better, we don't mean look better aesthetically, I mean their actions make them look better, I'm talking about spiritually speaking. And therefore, we show that we're all together. No matter who we are, some are a little, you know, you might be a little better than me, this person's a little better than that one, but to show we're all part of a community, we're all together, because we know we don't do too well when we judge individually. We do much better when we judge as part, like that's the whole reason to explain, we know there's a important commandment of prayer, that we have a daily mitzvah to pray every day. According to Maimonides, it's biblical. But there's a concept, what's the concept of going to synagogue or praying in a group? The concept is, let's say they give a parable, let's say you're going to a king, and let's say there are two towns who on either side of the king, and he's making a decision which town he's going to give, lower the taxes, give gifts, or whatever, he's going to be treating them well. So one town, let's say there are 100 people in each town. So each person on their own, they go to the dollar store and they buy a little getchka and they give it to the king. Or the other thing, let's get together, let's collect a couple of dollars from everyone and let's buy a more significant gift. So which one is gonna find favor in the king? Obviously it depends on the king, but generally speaking, the one that everyone joined in on, like in other words, if you look at every little thing, it's very easy to criticize and you can find fault in every little thing. But if it's one communal thing, so it's more likely to find favor. So that's the concept. No one could stand up in judgment alone. Who are we? We're not perfect. We all make mistakes. But together with the congregation, well, for instance, who could pray with the proper intent? So when you're davening together, okay, so for the first 5 minutes, you have kavana, then maybe I had some kavana in 20 minutes. So therefore, you have 10, 15, 20 people, so each one contribute to some part of it. So as in general, that's why it has, in the Bible, when it talks about the portion of rebuke, it talks about it twice in the Bible. So one time at the end of the book of Leviticus, it ends with hope. At the end of the day, don't worry, I know it's going to be bad, but Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Sarah, you'll have everyone, you'll have all the schus of our forefathers will protect us. However, in the end of Deuteronomy, in Parshas Kisavo, again it talks about the portion of rebuke, and it ends abruptly, like very suddenly, like you're going to be sold as slaves, no one's going to want you. So the question is, how come when it came to the end of Leviticus, it ends with glimmers of hope, that don't worry, don't give up. On the other hand, Kisavo ends very abruptly. So the comment is explained because when you look at the portion on the end of Deuteronomy, it's written in the singular. It's talking about individuals. So if you're individual, there's no guarantee as an individual to make it. The Jewish people as a whole have a guarantee. That no, there won't be another Holocaust, that there won't be, we're going to come out eventually, you know, whenever the Messiah is going to get here, it's going to be the Jew. So when we're together with the Jewish people, we're together with the groups, then there's always hope. So that's what the concept is over here. We put all, each one who could stand on their own, we put all four of the species together representing the different types of people, the different types of Jews all over the world. And we know that God has zero tolerance for not keeping his commandment between man and God, he has a lot of tolerance. But when you don't know, when you don't treat each other properly, that's when he has zero tolerance. That was the cause of the destruction of the Second Temple, because the people, Jews couldn't get along with one another. The First Temple, they did terrible sins. They worshipped idols. They committed illicit relations. But okay, don't worry, God has patience. They'll come around. But when you mistreat individuals, so God has very low tolerance when you're not treating, that's what we want to do. Right after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, hopefully we've come out victorious. When we've come out, we should have a happy and healthy year. So that's one, but we do that by showing our unity. We're all in it together. The Jewish people are in it together. And we have to get along with people, no matter what they are. They're less observant, more observant. They do good deeds, they do less good deeds. In fact, that's how they explain in the getting to the laws of the sukkah. So in general, there's certain things when you're having a full meal, let's say, obviously all things being equal, weather permitting, not raining, assuming all the factors work in our favor, there's a mitzvah to eat in the sukkah when you can, you know, to eat. But if you just snack, good question. But when you're just snacking, let's say I'm going to have a cup of water, I want to eat some chips, I'll have an apple, so then you could do it inside. There's no commandment. However, there's an option. So the Talmud relates two stories of two great rabbis. One rabbi said, you know what, let's bring the apple, the water, I want to, even though I don't have to, but the more the merrier. Well, it's a nice day, let me go out and eat out in the sukkah. And the other rabbi said, no, it's okay, you could bring me that, the stuff I don't have to eat in the sukkah, I'll just eat inside, I'm okay. So these two rabbis are known, had to do with the time of the Second Temple, by the destruction, the two famous rabbis. One was Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, he was one of the great rabbis around during that time, as well as Rav Tzadok. So the question is, what's the connection between sukkahs, the sukkah stories, and the destruction of the temple?
I'm sorry, yeah. I put up my hand before. I wanted you to finish the sentence, what you're doing, but yeah. I still had a question I wanted to get in way back. That is
please do
for some time. We're talking about the unity of the Jewish people, and what bothers me is. I don't think there's been a time, certainly in the last 100 years, where the Jewish people have been so divided as they are today. Politically, you've got them both sides, and we won't get into a political discussion. You don't have to do that.
Right, that's
but
even.
We know that between the left and the right.
Right, but that's
greater than it's.
I agree, but that's not a Jew. That's not necessarily a Jewish issue, but it's true. That's the world. That's even if you're non-Jewish, you have that issue of divide. Politics, the division's been great, but I agree. But it's not a Jewish exclusive problem. It's a world problem. You ever go on, yeah?
It's a Jewish problem.
It's not limited to.
Because it involves the values. What do we consider the value? The people on one side have one set of values. The people on the other side, their values are totally different.
I mean,
there's no reconciliation. People have differed in their political views for a long time. I used to be able to have discussions with friends and relatives. We could disagree, but we could come away friends. And today, you can't do that. You have to either, I have to say, okay, look, we can be friends, but we can't discuss this. Even here, it's the elephant in the room, because I don't want to mention what the division is about, because that will just create a division. But,
I'm agreeing it affects us also. I'm just saying that's not limited to a Jewish problem, but it definitely is a Jewish problem because we live in the world. I'm just saying is that's not specifically a Jewish problem, but I agree with you, it's a big problem. That's never been this bad where you can't, whether I'm saying whether the person's Jewish or not, you can't discuss the issue with them because, you know, depending who, because, you know, they go, you know, whatever the issue, yeah, I was just saying, and what was the other? I'm agreeing. No, I'm agreeing with you. It does affect you. 100%. No, I agree.
And their families are split like they everybody.
I'm agreeing with you, yeah.
So I'm sure everybody might experience it, but how do we interpret that in terms of a Jewish understanding?
Yeah, well, I agree. It's terrible. It's obviously no matter what you're... You know, first of all, you should never be fighting over politics, because politics, no one really knows who's right. We could have different...
I said
you should never be fighting over, like, fighting meaning personal, like you shouldn't hate someone over politics, because, well, basically politics is, it's not a black and white thing. There's so many multiple factors. So, let's say, what I'm saying is, I might think if this person wins, it's best for Canada, and no one really knows for sure who's right. I could think one way. I'm just saying, as opposed to more objective. Let's say you're working with science. Okay, if you follow the data, yeah, this should come out. With politics, I mean, I could think I know, but I know I don't. I know. I have different opinions about something, but I certainly know I can't say anything with certainty when it comes to what's better. Because who knows?
I can.
Okay.
Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. I don't think anyone can. That's the problem. If people think
the things going on today, I know are wrong.
Yeah, I'm saying.
And somebody else is going to tell me, oh, that's okay.
No, that's not my thing.
I know what I know.
No, I'm talking about. I agree. I was saying it. I don't know by who's going to be the next president or what's going to happen. That's what I'm agreeing. Right now, I know. I agree, I could see what's wrong, and I know what's... I'm not saying that. I'm saying is, I don't necessarily know by which party wins, what's gonna be 2 years from now, what's the consequence, and no one knows. That's what I'm saying. Obviously, I definitely see what's happening now, and I can see what's wrong and right. I'm agreeing with you. I'm talking about picking someone now, what's going to be 6 months from now. I don't know. Like, I might think I know, but... There are a lot of things that are going to come up, but I have no idea what's going to happen. It might change everything. That's what I'm saying. I'm agreeing with you right now. You're right. I can look around and I know what's wrong. People fighting and not getting, that's terrible, no matter, I don't care if it's Democrat, Republican, liberal, it doesn't make a difference. That's awful, and it shouldn't go on no matter what. I'm agreeing with that. That wasn't my point about. My point is that there are different unknowns about, no one's going to know what's going to be. If you pick this for you think, I'm picking this person because I think either the economy, and I can make a logical case, and I think I'm right, but I know it's an opinion. I might have a strong opinion depending how much I know about it. What I'm saying, even if my assumptions are right, something could happen in 3 months that could change everything around. That's all I'm saying, is we don't know, but yeah.
Before we leave the topic of politics, has anybody noticed who the Green Party has picked as their new leader?
Yeah, a woman, and she's black.
She's what?
She's a woman.
Yeah,
and she's black.
She's a woman, she's black, and she's Jewish.
No,
oh, that I didn't know. That
she,
I didn't know.
She converted in 2000.
That's the head of the Green Party now, newly elected.
Yeah, Annamie Paul is her name.
Yeah.
She's black, she's Jewish.
She's a woman.
She's a woman.
Well, we had a woman before.
What about her policies?
Well, again, it depends. You can argue back and forth. She's very environmental.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
That's the Green Party, their main platform. What's going to be interesting, the Green Party has a reputation somewhat for being anti-Israel. They passed anti-Israel resolutions. I don't know what her views are on Israel.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything published on that. But it's going to add an interesting element to the Canadian political scene.
The fact that she's Jewish or the fact she's black or a woman?
The three, Jewish, black, and
100%, female. But that's 100%, but that's exactly the problem today. The goal is to live in a society where you say the person, the president, whether it's a woman, black, that shouldn't be, I'm not blaming, I'm just saying that's the world we live in today, that everything is, in other words, we should be colorblind in a good sense. Like, I don't get black. You're a president. Like, I don't have to say you're a woman CEO. You're a CEO. Like, what? At the point is, you should be judged on merit. What you're doing. I don't care about your race, color. No. You're just describing the problem. Not a complaint on you. I'm just saying, but that's the world we live in. Everything is, spelled out. Like, and therefore that, and that causes more. No, you are black. Let's make. I want to make it clear. I'm. like we should be minimizing the different. I mean, obviously, if I see you, I know what color you are, but it's not relevant to my discussion with you, and it should make a different amount of both of you. I don't care what color you are. I care what your values are, and I care what you're going to do. I'm saying, but that's the world we live in, where everything's, you know, partisan. Like,
that's the ideal world, but that's not the world.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I agree. I'm not saying I'm ever going to see it, but that's the world I look to see. And that's how I want to deal with it, not to point out everyone's differences, and let's focus on some unity. But either way, getting back here, so that was the concept here, that because what was the cause for the destruction of the second temple is people had different. It sounds like it is today. People had different opinions, and no one tolerated anyone else's opinion. It's my way or the highway. What's the laws of Sukkah teaching me? You had two great rabbis. Let's say I want to have a cup of water. I want to take an apple. If you want to be strict and go into the Sukkah, great. It's praiseworthy and it's great. But if I want to eat in my house, don't look down. Don't say I'm too modern. Don't say you're too religious. In other words, everyone, you have to be acceptable of others. But you have to realize that there are different opinions. And it's not either whatever anyone who doesn't do like me, either you're too extreme, you're not extreme enough. That's the world we live in today. And that's the lesson here of Sukkah, is that no. Yes, you have to recognize people are different, there are different opinions, and there are some invalid opinions, like, you know, when it deals with how you treat people, but there's plenty of room to agree on, you know, in terms of different. So that's one lesson they learn from the Sukkah. And the other one is more on a personal level, is that these two rabbis are quoted in other areas also regarding what they did to try to avoid the destruction of the second temple. So Reb Tzedek, they said he fasted 40 days. He tried to stop God from destroying the temple. And this other rabbi, he didn't fast at all. So it's interesting to note that the one who is strict by Sukkah, the one who ate even the cup of water in the Sukkah, he wasn't strict by fasting. And the one who was strict by fasting, the point being is, in life, as Maimonides teaches us, the golden path is the middle path. That we have to, first of all, have to have balance in life. Doesn't mean you can't be passionate on individual issues, but overall, all extremes are bad. In other words, the problem is, if a person doesn't have balance in life, they're not going to have self-awareness, they're not going to know what to do. So for instance, like a child, let's say you have a little kid playing with blocks, or dolls, or whatever they're playing with. When you notice little kids, they're full-fledged happy, or they're full-fledged having a tantrum. In other words, when they're having a good time, there's not a worry in the world, everything's the greatest. 2 minutes later, I pull the doll away or the blocks, they're going crazy. But that's normal. That's what a child doesn't have balance. If I'm happy now, I'm not thinking about what's going to happen 30 seconds from now, 10 minutes from now, what am I going to do tomorrow? I'm enjoying the moment. And similarly, if I'm upset, I don't care if I'm going to get the doll back tomorrow. So, Charles is an example. Someone who doesn't have the foresight, the balance, that by definition, they don't have the mental balance to be. An adult should never be that way. No. In other words, even in moments of happiness, you realize everything's not going to be. You know, if you're an adult and you're mentally balanced, you're gonna moderate. You're never too happy, and even when sad things happen, okay, I still have my health, I have this, or whatever, hopefully you have something that, so in terms of balance in life, when a child is normal to. So there's halacha by the hadassim, by the myrtles, it has to be three branches, all from the same area, it has to be like, you can't have one, it has to be all in the same line, so, and the Talmud has a strange language. If instead of saying if it's not, it's no good, the word like it says, it calls it hadashota, a psychotic hadas. Like, what kind of, just say it's, what do you mean psychotic hadas? What kind of language? Just say it's no good. But that Because someone who's balanced, mentally balanced, that person knows how to function in life. That if you're not mentally balanced...
There's a Jewish word for psychotic.
Shota. Shin, the Hebrew word, it's in the Talmud all the time. Shin, Vav, Tes, and it's Hebrew, it's Shota.
I mean, how would they interpret that? I mean, we've got a modern day version of psychotic related to psychiatry, but they didn't have a branch of science called psychiatry. So what would their...
I mean, they had psychology before. It might not have been like... But definitely there was. You see psychology all the time, right? Obviously, it's different formats. You don't have the official terms, and they might have used different languages. But I assume psychology. Not only psychology in graduate school with all these terms, but I mean you had psychology back. The psychiatrist had it saying is someone who's not balanced is you have a mentor. In other words, in order to be balanced in life, you have to be able to have self-awareness. You got to look at more than 30 seconds in front of you. I'll just give an example. Let's say we know in general there are different things you can't do on the Sabbath. But to save a life, you're allowed to do anything. So the Talmud even talks about what about mentally someone needs something. And what's the example they give? A woman who's about to give birth and she wants you to turn the light on. Let's assume you can't light a flame on Shabbos. What does the flame have to do? Nothing, but no, because she'll feel better. She'll think the doctor can see better. So then 100%, because why? Because we've taken mentally someone, not only is it life and death on physical issues, but thousands of years ago we dealt with psychological issues. If a person, obviously we're more advanced in different ways than we were then, but the concept was always there. Judaism always took in psychological life and death situations. Of course, it's much harder. When someone's in physical harm, it's easy to see. Mentally, you need to be a professional, you have to be able to see past when a person's depressed and all that. Even today, that's why, the measuring, but if that person is there, we go ahead and of course we treat the person like similar, let's say for I'll give you an example. Let's assume in terms, generally speaking, all things being equal, let's say we're against abortion. The many cases where abortion is okay. Like the black and white case is if the fetus is endangering the mother. So not only we believe you have an obligation to do it. It's not even an option. As opposed to other religions, better two deaths than one murder. We agree in principle. We just say it's not a murder. In fact, you have a mitzvah to abort the fetus because the mother's life is more important. The fetus is only like a quasi-life. And there are others. So the question is always a question comes up. What happened? Let's say a woman is raped and she becomes pregnant. Are you allowed to do an abortion? So obviously if a woman wants to have the baby, of course she could have the baby, it's her choice. But a woman, let's say, I can't take it, I think of being raped, then of course, so then we take in mental, that's a life and death mental issue, so then there's room to discuss abortion. I'm saying so throughout Jewish literature, psychology has always played a major role in terms of whether it's Jewish law or anything else. I mean, as long as the human beings around, there was psychology, but as obviously, we're much more advanced. It's like we're much more advanced in sciences and medical. We're much more advanced, but the foundations were there. They might have been called differently. We might not have been as aware as we are now. But, those are just degrees in it. So that's what they point out, that the connection is, there are two connections. One is the fact that was the problem with the destruction of the temple, that everyone had different opinions and no one wanted to hear. And, in fact, I shot you down. Well, you don't know what you're talking about. You're crazy. That opinion's wrong. And they weren't willing to listen to anyone else. And, that's a big problem. We haven't gotten much better today with that. And the other one is more on a personal, psychological level. The point is that we have to be balanced. We have to keep our cool. We can't get overly excited and overly depressed in terms of being an adult. You have to be able to, during good times, you're okay, let me just not get, obviously, the times to be happy. You're at a wedding, you're at a funeral, but I don't mean like extreme cases where of course you're always going to have, then you should have, but that's what, even at a wedding, what do? Under the chuppah, we break a glass. Because what we want to show, you know, still, you know, don't get overexcited. You'd be very happy your child's getting married, you're getting married, whoever it might be, your friend's marriage. But still, you know, everything's not great and who knows what's going to be tomorrow. You always have to, that's what adults do. Anyone who's mentally balanced, how do you function in life? You can't, if you react to every headline, which some people do, that's why they're so messed up. But you have to be able, okay, so it's not good, let's try to get through it. Maybe we could find something better. You know, you have to know how to deal with everyday scenarios. That's what the lesson of the four species are, the balance. And you have to accept, we all have different opinions and we put them all together. The estrogu, the four different opinions, four different children, but we sit at the Seder together and everyone has different questions and we give different answers to different people. That's the way it has to work, you know, on Sukkot as well. And that's the concept of the four species. And as well, they point out that, interesting, in the Bible, it uses the word Sukkot, like in plural. I guess you, I'll spell it in English, you know, S-U-K-K-A-S, however you're going to spell it, O-S. But it spells it in the plural. And when we talk about it in the Talmud, it's called Sukkah in the singular. So why is it that when the Bible talks about it, they talk about it in plural, and when we talk about it, or I should say when the oral law discusses it, it's singular. So the answer is follows. We have a similar question by Passover, by Pesach. In the Bible, it's known as the holiday Chag HaMatzos, the holiday of the unleavened bread. But when we call it colloquial Pesach. You know, how's your Pesach? So Passover week. So what's the difference? Why do we call it Passover and God calls it the holiday of Matzah? So the Kedushas Halev, one of the great Hasidic rabbis, said as follows. He said, because I'll tell you why, because we're always trying to praise God, and God is praising us. So when we say, so what is God calling? What does the matzah represent? The Jewish people, they're willing to leave Egypt, go into the Midbar, there was no food, and they're going to trust God that he was going to provide them with food for the next 40 years. So it shows the Jewish people's faith in God. So we call it, so that's why God calls it matzah. Wow, look, it's great, the Jewish people, they were willing to go out and believe in me. We call it Passover, because why is it called Passover? Because when God was killing the firstborn Egyptians, so God passed over our house. So Passover, we're praising God for doing acts of loving kindness to us, and God praises us. So similarly here, there's an interesting debate in the Talmud when the Torah says that the Jewish people dwelled in the Sukkot for 40 years when they left Egypt till they got to Israel. What do you mean? What is a sukkah? So one opinion is it looks something like this, that they, whenever they traveled, they built something, and when they moved, they had to take it down, and then they rebuilt it again. Was it literally boot like we have now? Or some say no. It was the cloud of glory protecting us. It wasn't like a physical thing. It was God protecting us from all the weather, from the wild animals. It says the miracle was we didn't have to change shoes for 40 years. Our shoes never wore out. Our clothes never wore out. I don't know if people like wearing the same clothes, but I guess maybe every day they look different, whatever the case might have been. So that's the debate in the Talmud, whether it was literally sukkahs they built and took down every week, every day, whenever they traveled. Or no, it was the cloud. So the commentators explain. So if you assume that it was literal, that each person built their own booth, that means there were hundreds of thousands of sukkahs in the desert. Every family built their own sukkah and they ate in the sukkah. If you assume it was the cloud of glory, so then that means it was one. The cloud of glory was protecting everybody. So that's how they explain. So in the Torah, it's called in the plural. Why? Because God's praising us. wow, the Jewish people are amazing. For 40 years they traveled, they put the sukkah down, they rebuilt it for constantly for 40 years. What dedication to me. They're willing to travel, not knowing where they're going. So again, so the Torah is praising the Jewish people on their dedication and sacrifice. We call it sukkah in singular because God, you're amazing. It was the cloud of glory. You protected us for all these years. So the same theme is we praise God and God praises us. And that's a lesson in life that we should be praising other people and let other people, as opposed to us praising ourselves and trashing the other person. The lesson is the more you praise, in other words, the more you praise other people, it doesn't have to be praise per se, but the more nice you speak and appropriate you speak to someone else, that's how you usually get treated. If someone is, you know, obnoxious to you, you're not usually going to get a nice, oh, hi, how's everything? Your human nature is you're going to come back at them the way they spoke to you. The way you speak to someone else is the way usually people speak back to you. You know, they're always. So that's what the lesson is that God is teaching us. Whether it's Chag HaMatzos or Sukkah, God's always praising us. That's the way he writes it in the Bible, praising our dedication, our self-sacrifice, and we do back to him. We write Sukkah, thank you for the cloud of glory. So that's why we have, that's the difference in the language between the oral law, you know, and the oral law, and it's written in the Bible. So those are some of the lessons we have of the holiday of Sukkot, and as well, it's two aspects. Why do we have like Simchas Torah on this holiday? Well, obviously that's the way it turns out now, because that's when we finish the Bible, when we start again. We're going to start Genesis. This Shabbos we'll have our Yitzchak service, and you know we'll have our service in the synagogue. I think it'll be around 4:00, and then the following week is we begin the book of Genesis. We start all over again. So why do we have, so besides practically, but because it's a double joy, is not only, as we said, it's a Simcha Torah of, it's Sukkot is the last of the three holidays. You have Pesach, so it's the three pilgrims. Three times a year, the Jewish people used to go up, travel to the temple and bring the sacrifices. But in addition to that, it's a time of right after Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And it says in the Bible, V'samachta l'fnei Hashem, we should be joyous in front of God. And the commentators explain it's like any time, the closer relationship you have with anyone, the better the connection. So too with God, you know, doing sins, doing mistakes, that causes a barrier. So right after we just survived and completed Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, so to speak, we're born again. They got it from us. That's what Yom Kippur means. We start with a new clean slate. Everyone starts fresh. So therefore, my relation with God is even closer. So it's a double simchas. It's part of the cycle of the Shalosh Regolim, the three pilgrimages travels. And it's also, at the Simchas Torah as well, spiritually, we just came over. We prepared 30 days in the month of Elul, the month before Rosh Hashanah. And we had the 10 days of repentance. And now, it's total joy. So therefore we have a combination. We have the physical joy of the festive holidays as well as the spiritual connection after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. That's why Sukkot is known as, each holiday has their own name, that Pesach is the time of freedom, Shavuot the time of the Torah is given, but Sukkot is known as Zman Simcha Seino. It's a time of joy and happiness. And that's because it's the time it's harvesting. We're picking up the crop now, you know, from an agricultural point of view. And as well as a spiritual point of view, it's right after Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and we feel spiritually elevated as well. We just had our atonement and purification, and therefore we can enjoy the holiday of Sukkot to a fullest extent, even more, you know, than the other holidays. That's why the special designation, Zman Simcha Seino. Any questions, comments?
for today?
No, I when the tradition of fasting goes, because you have